Take care. He sounds like a piece of work. Don't worry, I said. I thought about kissing her goodbye at the door, but I didn't. I figured she wouldn't want me to. I just ran over to the Cadillac. I was back in the coffee shop and almost at the end of my second cup when Elizabeth Beck appeared. She had nothing to show for her shopping. No purchases, no gaudy bags. I guessed she hadn't actually been inside any stores. She had hung around for 4 long hours to let the government guy do whatever he needed to. I raised my hand. She ignored me and headed straight for the counter. Bought herself a tall white coffee and carried it over to my table. I decided what I was going to tell her. I don't work for the government, I said.
Then I'm disappointed, she said,
for the third time. How could I? I killed a cop, remember?
Yes.
Government people don't do stuff like that.
They might, by accident.
But they wouldn't run away afterward. They would stick around and face the music. She went quiet and stayed quiet for a long time, sipped her coffee slowly.
I've been there maybe 8 or 10 times. Where the college is, I mean. They run events for the students' families now and then, and I try to be there at the start and finish of every semester. One summer, I even rented a little U-Haul and helped him move his stuff home.
So?
It's a small school. But even so, on the first day of the semester, it gets very busy. Lots of parents, lots of students, SUVs, cars, vans, traffic everywhere. The family days are even worse. And you know what?
What?
I've never seen a town policeman there. Not once. Certainly not a detective in plain clothes.
I looked out the window to the internal mall sidewalk.
Just a coincidence, I suppose. A random Tuesday morning in April, early in the day, nothing much going on, and there's a detective waiting right by the gate for no obvious reason.
What's your point?
That you were terribly unlucky. I mean, what were the odds?
I don't work for the government.
You took a shower. Washed your hair.
Did I?
I can see it and smell it. Cheap soap, cheap shampoo.
I went to a sauna.
You didn't have any money. I gave you $20. You bought at least 2 cups of coffee. That would leave maybe $14.
It was a cheap sauna.
It must have been.
I'm just a guy.
And I'm disappointed about it.
You sound like you want your husband to get busted.
I do.
He'd go to prison.
He already lives in a prison, and he deserves to. But he'd be freer in a real prison than where he is now, and he wouldn't be there forever.
You could call somebody. You don't need to wait for them to come to you.
She shook her head. That would be suicide, for me and Richard.
Just like it would be if you talked about me like this in front of anybody else. Remember, I wouldn't go quietly. People would get hurt. You and Richard, maybe.
She smiled. Bargaining with me again?
Warning you again. Full disclosure. She nodded.
I know how to keep my mouth shut, she said.
And then she proved it by not saying another word. We finished our coffee in silence and walked back to the car. We didn't talk. I drove her home, north and east, completely unsure whether I was carrying a ticking time bomb with me or turning my back on the only inside help I would ever get. Paulie was waiting behind the gate. He must have been watching from his window and then taken up position as soon as he saw the car in the distance. I slowed and stopped, and he stared out at me. Then he stared at Elizabeth Beck. Give me the pager, I said.
I can't.
Just do it. Paulie unlatched the chain and pushed the gate. Elizabeth unzipped her bag and handed me the pager. I let the car roll forward and buzzed my window down, stopped level with where Paulie was waiting to shut the gate again. Check this out, I called. I tossed the pager overarm out in front of the car. It was a left-handed throw. It was weak and lacked finesse, but it got the job done. The little black plastic rectangle looped up in the air and landed dead center on the driveway, maybe 20 feet in front of the car. Pauly watched his trajectory and then froze when he realized what it was. "Hey," he said. He went after it. I went after him. I stamped on the gas, and the tires howled, and the car jumped forward. I aimed the right-hand corner of the front bumper at the side of his left knee. I got very close, but he was incredibly quick. He scooped the pager off the blacktop and skipped back, and I missed him by a foot. The car shot straight past him. I didn't slow down, just accelerated away and watched him in the mirror, standing in my wake, staring after me, blue tire smoke drifting all around him. I was severely disappointed. If I had to fight a guy who outweighed me by 200 pounds, I'd have been much happier if he was crippled first, or at least if he wasn't so damn fast. I stopped on the carriage circle and led Elizabeth back out at the front door. Then I put the car away and was heading for the kitchen when Zachary Beck and John Chapman Duke came out looking for me. They were agitated and walking quickly. They were tense and upset. I thought they were going to give me a hard time about Pauly, but they weren't.
"Angel Dolly's missing," Beck said.
I stood still. The wind was blowing in off the ocean. The lazy swell was gone, and the waves were as big and noisy as they had been on the first evening. There was spray in the air.
"He spoke with you last thing," Beck said. "Then he locked up and left, and he hasn't been seen since."
"What did he want with you?" Duke said.
"I don't know," I said.
"You don't know? You were in there 5 minutes." I nodded. "He took me back to the warehouse office."
"And?"
"And nothing. He was all set to say something, but his cell phone rang."
"Who was it?"
I shrugged. "How would I know? Some kind of an urgent thing. He talked on the phone the whole 5 minutes. He was wasting my time and yours, so I just gave it up and walked back out."
"What was he saying on the phone?"
I didn't listen. Didn't seem polite.
"Hear any names?"
Beck asked. I turned to him, shook my head. "No names, but they knew each other. That was clear. Dahl did a lot of listening, I guess. I think he was taking instructions about something."
"About what?"
"No idea."
"Something urgent?"
"I guess so. He seemed to forget all about me. Certainly he didn't try to stop me when I walked away."
"That's all you know?"
"I assumed it was some kind of a plan. Instructions for the following day, maybe."
"Today?"
I shrugged again. "I'm just guessing. It was a very one-sided conversation."
"Terrific," Duke said. "You're a real big help, you know that?"
Beck looked out at the ocean.
"So he took an urgent call on his cell, and then he locked up and left. That's all you can tell us?"
"I didn't see him lock up, and I didn't see him leave. He was still on the phone when I came out."